Today, the Bears are back, baby. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'm latest post covering finance and property news, and this is our weekly market update. And this week has continued to underscore the change in the market's weather following the hopium of July. We're long overdue for a correction in equities, and it's clear that higher rates have now become the catalyst for that, said Michael Reynolds, Vice President Investment Strategy at investment and wealth advisory firm Glenmead. When the opportunity cost for capital becomes more competitive, valuations should correct on risk-bearing assets, especially large cap equities that have been trading at significant premiums this year. And news that China's seemingly eternally beleaguered property giant Evergrande has sought bankrupt protection in New York only added to the strange feeling that the financial world has actually been turned upside down. While the problems in the China property sector are far better understood than they were when Evergrande teetered 2 years ago, China's post-lockdown economic troubles, perhaps best typified by the nation's slide into deflation, as a new and worrying link in what seems increasingly like a negative feedback loop. As 2023 began, the consensus was clear. China's economy would surge out of COVID-19 lockdowns, with monetary and fiscal stimulus providing tailwinds, while the US would fall into a brief recession that would likely lead to equity market corrections and rate cuts. But instead, the US economy has proved amazingly resilient, and equity markets have surged 22% from their October 2022 lows. But in the US, the climb in long-term bond yields to levels not seen in more than a decade is a reminder that economic strength can also weigh on investors. And yields have pushed higher this week after the minutes from the Federal Reserve's August meeting suggested that rate rises might not be done. Those fears have been compounded by a steady stream of data suggesting the US economy continues to hold up surprisingly well under the weight of the Fed's rapid tightening cycle. And in fact, there's a bit of debate now as to whether in fact all of those impacts are delayed or whether in fact they've all flushed through and nobody noticed. We will see. Anyway, benchmark 10-year US Treasury yields dropped from 10-month highs after they approached but failed to break through levels that would have been the highest since 2007 on Thursday. Traders see a nearly 91% chance of the Fed holding rates at current levels at its September meeting, according to the FedWatch tool. But even if the Fed is done for now, it seems investors are starting to believe that the rate cuts most economists had priced in for 2024 may not be a sure thing. And as well as large US Treasury issuance, there are other factors in play that it helped to explain those rising yields. For example, America's own surging debt levels and ballooning interest payments, which caused Fitch to downgrade the country's credit rating, are indeed a factor. The US Treasury's rate of borrowing means it will need to sell a lot of bonds, putting further upward pressure on yields. And recent moves by the Bank of Japan to loosen its yield curve control have sent 10-year bond yields there higher, and an auction of 20-year bonds this week saw poor demand, suggesting investors are waiting for further policy adjustments. Rising bond yields in Japan are bad news for the rest of the world, given the fact that the Japanese have been big buyers of foreign bonds with yields at home so low. And of course, it's China's economy that is spluttering, with tepid growth worsening the long-standing crisis in the nation's property market. Ironically, Evergrande's bankruptcy filing comes after a week when other Chinese institutions have been in the spotlight. Another developer, Country Garden, is teetering following debt defaults, while a shadow bank with heavy exposure to the property sector, Zhonghe Enterprise Group, has also missed payments on its high-yield investment trust products. But Evergrande, the second largest developer in China, is the original poster child for the nation's property woes. Concerns about its debt load surfaced as early as 2017, but it was in the middle of 2021 that the company started missing debt payments and the crisis hit the global headlines. The group has been in a sort of permanent restructuring process since then. Now, it's a task made all the more difficult by deepening pain in China's property sector, where a combination of oversupply, huge debts carried by developers, and a loss of confidence by Chinese consumers, partly due to the pandemic and partly because of fears developers couldn't complete buildings, has smashed activity. The latest data is ugly, with new construction starts down 24.5% in the first 7 months of the year, and prices in some areas have fallen by as much as 25% from their October 2021 peaks. So Evergrande has filed for Chapter 15 bankruptcy protection, which allows a company to protect its US assets while restructuring deals are worked out elsewhere. In Evergrande's case, its filing talks about restructuring in Hong Kong and the Cayman Islands, so seeking bankruptcy protection could be part of the debt deals that it's seeking to put in place. Nevertheless, the way headlines with the word Evergrande and bankruptcy spread around social media on Friday morning suggests this episode could have an outsized impact on already weakened sentiment. The size of the task facing Chinese authorities is clearly mounting. This is no mere dip in confidence that can be rescued by a few policy initiatives. Instead, this is a deep structural crisis in property and construction caused by debt and demographic problems that will take years to resolve. Broad restructuring is needed in a nation where the population is rapidly aging and youth employment is at least 21.3%. We say at least because China refused to publish this week's numbers, not just the posturing President Xi Jinping has so far offered. On Friday, the S&P 500 ended nearly flat as gains in defensive sectors and energy offset weaknesses in mega cap growth stocks, while investors looked towards next week's speech by Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell. Mega cap technology related stocks dipped, with Alphabet down 1.9% and Tesla falling 1.7%, as investors fretted that interest rates could stay higher for longer. The tech-heavy Nasdaq posted the biggest weekly decline of the three major indices, losing 2.6%. On the day, the S&P 500 lost 0.01% to 4,369, and the Nasdaq Composite dropped 0.2% to 13,290. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose just a little, 0.07% to 34,500. The Nasdaq has fallen 7.2% in the past 3 weeks. That's the deepest three-week drop since last December, and the S&P 500's three-week loss of 4.6% is the biggest such decline since the 3 weeks back in March. The volatility index hit its highest in nearly 3 months, reflecting rising investor anxiety, although, as I've said before, the index masks most of the option action, which is now much shorter term. Nvidia's shares fell 0.1%, but still notched a weekly gain. Nvidia has had a spectacular rally on expected growth in artificial intelligence, nearly tripling in value year to date. Tech bulls on Wall Street are optimistic that the chipmaker will deliver quarterly results that top estimates next Wednesday, and suggest that Nvidia may not have delivered blowout guidance on its data center businesses, as it will likely continue to ride the AI wave of demand. With demand for AI training having lifted substantially in the past quarter, with no other silicon supplier now capable of providing such volumes within an order of magnitude of Nvidia's output, we believe any unfilled demand will just be pushed into forward quarters, fueling future sales and EPS, Wedbush said in a note. Defensive sectors such as consumer staples and utilities rose, with gains in firms such as retailer Walmart helping the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The S&P 500 Energy Index rose 0.9%, and ExxonMobil were among leading gainers at 1.5%. Among major movers of the day, Estée Lauder tumbled 3.3% after the cosmetics maker forecast its annual net sales and profit below street estimates. And Deere & Company fell more than 5% as fears grow that the boom in sales of tractors and other machinery have last peaked amid falling crop prices, and that offset a quarterly beat and rise. Hawaiian Electric shares surged 14% after the utility firm said its goal was not to restructure the company, and shares of cryptocurrency firm Coinbase Global fell 3%, and Riot Platforms tumbled nearly 5.5% as Bitcoin hit a two-month low with little hope of returning higher anytime soon. The main event for next week will, of course, be the Kansas City Fed Jackson Hole Symposium. Fed Chair Powell will reiterate that more rate hikes may be needed and that rates should stay high for longer. With the recent surge in real yields, Fed Chair Powell can acknowledge that policy is restrictive and that future rate cuts could eventually be warranted as long as inflation has been defeated, but that's a ways out yet. And this week, gold also broke below previous local lows, another signal of a downtrend formation in addition to lower local highs, which were at 1,985 in July versus 2,080 back in May. Gold's sharp decline began a month ago when the bears once again prevented the metal from consolidating above $1,980, a critical resistance level since May. On the way down in August, gold first broke below the 50-day moving average, and 2 days again it sank below the 200-day moving average. Both curves act as medium and long-term trend indicators. Gold failed to rally higher after a drop below the 50-day moving average, but the failure only intensified the sell-off. On Tuesday and Wednesday, there was a battle for the 200-day, which the bears also won. And since the beginning of 2021, for at least a month of sustained pressure on prices has followed such a signal. A crucial fundamental factor putting pressure on gold is the rise in government bond yields in developed countries and falling inflation. It is becoming actually increasingly difficult for gold to compete on yield, so gold futures were last at $1,916.40 an ounce. Now, over in Europe, shares sank to their lowest level in 6 weeks on Friday, dragged down by financials and healthcare, as concerns over interest rates staying longer and higher and China's dwindling growth prospects both hit investor sentiments. The pan-European Stoxx 600 closed 0.6% lower, falling for the fourth straight session and sinking to its lowest since July the 7th. Surging bond prices have pressurized equities this week, with the Stoxx 600 notching a weekly fall of more than 2%. Equity market valuations are coming under some pressure, with bond yields hitting new multi-year highs, said Kiran Ganesh, Global Head of Investment Communications at UBS, Chief Investment Office. China-exposed luxury heavyweights LVMH and Hermes fell, and that was on heightened concerns over dwindling demand from the world's second largest economy. And Europe's largest bank, HSBC, and UK-based Prudential, also which does business in China, fell 1.4% and 3.2% respectively, and Barclays trimmed its price target on the latter. Weighing in on the healthcare sector was a 1% decline in Novo Nordisk, AstraZeneca, and Roche Holdings. And European miners, who are also affected by developments in China, lost around 1.5%. And meanwhile, data showed Eurozone inflation slowed further, and even underlying price pressures appeared to have peaked, possibly easing pressure on the European Central Bank to keep raising rates after its fastest rate hike cycle on record. Maybe it's too early to declare a victory over inflation. What markets are telling us is that the economy is proving to be resilient, and it's unlikely that central banks are going to have to cut rates next year because the economy will still be in a decent shape, Ganesh said. Dutch payments processor ADN hit a more than three-year low, down 2.9%, adding to Thursday's record loss after weak earnings raised concerns about its valuations and a price war grew. Retailers fell 1.2% as H&M lost 1.7% a day after reports that the world's second biggest fashion retailer has decided to gradually stop sourcing products from Miramar. And food retailer Denner Polska dropped 8.4%, the biggest fall in the Stoxx 600 after issuing its second quarter results. and a report showed that the ECB is preparing to send a letter to Italy raising objections about the government's windfall tax on banks' profits. The DAX index in Germany traded flat, the CAC 40 in France dropped 0.3%, while the FTSE in the UK traded 0.65% lower, after data showed that British retail sales slumped more sharply than expected in July. The bigger-than-expected drop in sales in July was explained by the heavy rain that put shoppers off, who are also feeling the hit from high inflation and 14 back-to-back increases in interest rates. Official data show that sales volumes last month were 1.2% lower than in June, and economists had forecast a 0.5% drop. Retail sales volumes were 3.2% lower than a year earlier, the ONS said, compared with economists' forecasts for a 2.1% decline. Sterling weakened as investors assessed how much the sales drop represented a warning sign about a slowdown in Britain's sluggish economy beyond the hit caused by the sixth wettest July on records, dating back to 1836. It was a particularly bad month for supermarkets, as the summer washout combined with the increased cost of living meant sluggish sales of both clothing and food. Heather Boville, Deputy Director for Surveys and Economic Indicators at ONS, said department stores and household goods also dropped significantly. Many shoppers went online rather than venturing out into the rain, with 27.4% of retail sales taking place via the internet, up from 26% in June, and that's the highest share since February 2022. Food store sale volumes fell by a monthly 2.6%, while non-food store sales fell by 1.7%. The drop followed a strong June for retailers that were boosted by a heat wave. And as well as the unpredictability of Britain's weather, consumers have been hit by high inflation, which stood at almost 7% last month, down from a peak of about 11% last October, but still the highest among the world's large, rich economies. However, July's data represented only the second time that sales volumes fell on a month-to-month basis so far in 2023, suggesting maybe a resilience in consumer demand. Some economists said the impact of the steady rise in interest rates by the Bank of England would inevitably hurt consumer spending in the second half of 2023. Our view is still that the growing drag on activity from higher interest rates will eventually generate a 0.5% peak-to-trough fall in real consumer spending, said Ruth Gregory, Deputy Chief UK Economist at Capital Economics. Market research firm GfK reported last month that consumer confidence fell in July for the first time since January, but Samuel Toombs of Pantheon Macroeconomics said the acceleration of wage growth and slowing inflation painted a more upbeat picture. Data published this week showed that basic wages grew at their fastest since records began in 2001, which you could say is bad news for the Bank of England, which is worried that high inflation will persist, but a help for consumers whose earnings are catching up with price growth, well, at least for some. Looking ahead, we continue to expect households' real disposable income to rise briskly, Toombs said. Despite July's rain, Next and Marks and Spencer, two of Britain's biggest retailers, reported strong trading and upgraded their profit outlook this month. But the sector has seen losers too. Last week, privately owned homewares and household goods retailer Wilko collapsed into administration, putting 12,500 jobs at risk. And the British annual inflation rate came in at 6.8% on Wednesday. That's a drop from 7.9% the prior month, but is still considerably above the Bank of England's 2% medium-term target. And European Central Bank President Christine Lagarde hinted that the central bank there would pause its more than year-long rate hike campaign in September, but a further rise by year-end is still on the cards, with inflation running hot. Back in Europe, SUSE stock surged over 50% after the software solution provider said it would be taken private by its majority shareholder. Now, oil prices steadied on Friday, but look set to end a seven-week winning streak on concerns of slowing growth in China, the world's largest crude importer, as well as the potential for higher interest rates from the Federal Reserve. Crude prices saw some strength on Thursday, rising from a two-week low, after China's central bank said it would keep markets flush with liquidity to help shore up economic growth. However, Both contracts were set to lose around 3% this week, having rallied for the past 7 weeks after extended supply cuts by major producers Saudi Arabia and Russia. And there was a report this week also that said that the US was producing more oil than ever. The crude futures edged up in the US at $81.40 a barrel, while the Brent contract rose 0.83% to $84.83. Now in Asia, most Asian stocks kept in a tight range on Friday amid persistent fears of rising US interest rates, although signals of more Chinese stimulus measures helped local shares mark some gains. But Asian markets were also nursing steep losses for the week as concerns over worsening economic conditions in China added to the anxiety over rising interest rates. Japan's Nikkei 225 fell 0.43%, while the Topix fell 0.5%, as data showed that Japanese consumer inflation remained sticky in July, putting more pressure on the Bank of Japan to potentially tighten policy further. The technology-heavy South Korean KOSPI slid 0.61%, while heavyweight Hong Kong-listed technology stocks also continued to decline. The index there was down 2.07%, and Evergrande was at 165. India's Nifty 50 sank for the past five sessions, a bit of an expected spike in Indian inflation has pressurized local stocks. And Chinese markets struggled after the People's Bank of China said that it will continue to pump up liquidity conditions and support slowing economic growth in the country. The Shanghai Composite was down 1%. The PBOC's comments come just a few days after the central bank unexpectedly cut short and medium-term lending rates. The move likely heralds a cut in the bank's loan prime rate next week, which is expected to further loosen monetary conditions in the country. China is grappling with the slowing post-COVID economic recovery, which could be worsened by a potential default in the country's real estate sector, particularly in country garden holdings. So while the prospect of Chinese stimulus measures provided some relief in Asian markets on Friday, most exchanges were nursing steep weekly losses on the prospect of a slowdown in the region's largest economy. The Nikkei 225 was down nearly 3%, while Australia's ASX 200 shed 2.5% over the week. China's key indices were down again, while the Hang Seng was down 4.4%, its worst week since mid-June. And with China at risk of tipping into prolonged stagnation and a spiraling property crisis threatening financial stability, there is growing unease over why its leaders are not rushing to revive the world's second largest economy. Even in a country known for opaque and drawn-out decision-making, investors, analysts and diplomats are pointing to signs that Beijing seems hesitant to deliver the bold policies needed to prop up an ailing post-COVID recovery. This is not just an economic problem, but a geopolitical one. The view of several China watchers is that President Xi Jinping's focus on national security is actually restricting and working counter to the economic effort, scaring off the money Beijing says it's seeking to attract. The core problem this year is that the leadership has given vague, high-level instructions for officials to balance economic development against national security, said Christopher Bader, Deputy Director of China Research at Gavocal Dragonomics. If officials are unsure what the leadership wants them to do, they're likely to put off any action until they receive more information. The result is policy paralysis, even if that comes at a substantial cost. China, though, has hit back at such criticism in its response. A small number of Western politicians and media amplify and hype up the temporary problems existing in China's economic recovery, Foreign Minister spokesman Wang Wenbin told media on Wednesday. They will eventually be slapped in the face by reality, he said. And the government has suspended publishing data on youth unemployment, which has hit record highs in what analysts say is partially a symptom of regulatory crackdowns on big employers in the technology, education, real estate and finance sectors. Without giving details, the State Council on Thursday said it would optimize the environment for private firms and make greater efforts to attract foreign investment. The private sector accounts for 60% of gross domestic product and 80% of urban employment, officials say. A day after this week's dire data, the party's official journal published a speech from Xi in which he warned against Western capitalist economic models. The speech, which was delivered back in February, made no mention of structural imbalances or how to solve them. We may all have to live with a less vibrant economy for a long time. So over to Australia, where the share market tumbled this week, dragged lower by those concerns about China. The benchmark ASX 200 added just 2.1 points on Friday to close at 7,148, which trimmed its loss over the week to 2.6%. That's the steepest weekly sell-off since September 2022. The mining sector was the biggest drag on the share market, tumbling 4.3% over the week amid a batch of weak economic data out of China and fading optimism about investors that Beijing will step in to kickstart a recovery. That uncertainty hit the commodities market, sending iron ore around $107 a ton in Singapore and the Australian dollar to a nine-month low. And against the UK pound, it was down to 50.29. Ouch. Iron ore giant BHP, which accounts for about 10% of the benchmark gauge, staged a comeback on Friday to climb 1.35% to $43.69 after clocking heavier losses earlier in the week. Fortescue Metals also rallied to close up 0.99% to $20.33, and Rio Tinto added 0.88% to $105.69. The big four banks also weighed on the share market this week, dragging the sector down 3.6%. Commonwealth Bank, the country's biggest lender, lost 5.1% on the week as the shares traded ex-div. The bank fell another 0.6% on Friday to the lowest close since June. ANZ, Westpac and National Australia Bank all lost more than 3% over the 5 days. Corporate earnings from ASX heavyweights, including AGL Energy, Origin Energy and CSL, dominated the trading week. But on Friday, Magellan Financial was the standout, soaring 13.3% to $10.42 after the embattled money manager reported a drop in fund management expenses and said it would pay a special 30-cent dividend. Net income for the full year still dropped 52% to $282.7 million, but it was better than analysts' consensus. Other companies to report on Friday included property fund manager Centura Capital, which fell 5.9% to $1.43 after its financial year 24 guidance fell short, and Abacus Group, which jumped 10% to $1.19 despite writing down its office and retail assets by more than 10%. And Imugene was the session's worst performer on the ASX 200, tumbling 16% to 7.9 cents after the biotech raised $35 million from a share placement. The shares were priced at 8.4 cents apiece. The deal is also being followed by a share purchase plan to raise about $30 million. So while Australian investors are painfully aware of the exposure to the Chinese economy, they can't afford to ignore the striking move up in bond yields, caused in part by the resilience of the US economy. Indeed, the growing sense that the world faces a higher for longer interest rate regime, amplified by earnings that have painted a picture of real economic resilience, should give Australian policymakers, investors and households pause too. A decade of low interest rates might have fueled asset prices, but it also lifted debt levels to historic levels, and a prolonged period of higher rates will prove testing at the very least. So is this the pullback of frothy looking market needed, or the start of something bigger? That is now the key question. Well, much will depend on yields. If, as many expect, the deterioration in the US economy does gather a bit of steam, then yields could come back. And if Fed Chairman Jerome Powell uses his speech at the annual Jackson Hole Symposium in Wyoming next week to strike a hawkish tone, then yields could push even higher. And the threat that this causes something in markets to break should not be discounted. Either way, Australian investors who've seen the ASX 200 fall 3.8% since the start of this month should stay on alert. A slowdown in the US economy that brings bond yields down will have consequences, and so will a further rise in yields. Indeed, investors around the globe, and particularly in Australia, also need to keep watching China. Further fallout from China's stalled economy and crisis-ravaged property sector will also weigh on sentiment, and the sort of big bang stimulus that the nation needs if they did it, could well have the opposite effect. But as you stand back, we can certainly say that for now the bears are in control, and remember folks, crashes in share prices tend to happen in September and October. So keep that in mind. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.